for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
So we
these days
more busy, and the reason is because people have no money, and they try to save money, and we're here to save your shoes and to save your money.
These days, even Wall Street billionaires are learning to walk an extra day in their designer shoes.
But I would walk 500 miles, and I would walk 500 more.
Shoe leather and other economic indicators on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
We love to trip over our economic shoes, don't you think? Good morning. It's Friday, August 7th. I'm John Hockenberry, joined by Amy Holmes all week long. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning. So coming up this hour, we're going to be taking a close and rather intimate look at economic indicators. And yesterday, people around the world had to cope with a major setback, a morning without Twitter.
I survived.
Can you imagine?
I survived.
We talk with one survivor later in the show. And sadly, we say goodbye to iconic director John Hughes. But first, Lakshman Achuthan, Managing Director of the Economic Cycle Research Institute. Lakshman, what is the oddest, weirdest. Strangest economic indicator you've come across?
Well, there are a few. One that's really helped us out in understanding the business cycle is the price of tallow. This is a sensitive industrial material price. Tallow. Now, a lot of people think...
Is that lard?
Yeah, it's rendered animal fat. A lot of people think it's basically for candles, but it's also for industrial soap. And this becomes very, very important because when factories are busy, they're dirty. And when you're dirty, you want to get cleaned up. And the price of tallow rises and falls.
How do you find stuff like that?
Oh, you spend a lot of time looking at data over years and years. And you think about it, and it makes sense.
Well, Lakshman, we'll be back with you in a moment. Stay with us. But first, a look at the top headlines.
And in the headlines, not about rendered animal fat, the U.S. and Pakistan will use DNA testing to confirm whether Taliban chief Batula Masood is dead. There are reports that Masood was among those killed in a U.S. missile strike in Pakistan earlier this week. In the U.S., Sonia Sotomayor will be sworn in tomorrow as the next Supreme Court justice. For the first time, the ceremony will be televised. She was confirmed by the Senate yesterday in a vote of 68-31.
If you're thinking of trading in your clunker, you have until Labor Day. The Senate approved another $2 billion for the Cash for Clunkers program last night. Most popular car being bought? The Ford Escape.
What's the most popular clunker? That's what I really
being
want
turned
to
in.
We're waiting for a major economic indicator, the number of people who lost their jobs last month. That's why we're focused on economic indicators this morning. The monthly jobless report is the broadest measure of employment in the United States. Forecasts before the report suggest there has been a slowdown in layoffs, which may be good news for the economy. Filmmaker John Hughes has died at the age of 59. He's known for directing the 1980s comedy 16 Candles and The Breakfast Club. He suffered a heart attack yesterday while walking in New York. In 1994, he was estimated to have a box office worth of more than $1.3 billion.
Whoa.
And we're paying tribute to John Hughes this morning. What's your favorite John Hughes film, John Hughes character, John Hughes line? Which were you, the athlete, the princess, the criminal, the outsider? Which were you?
I think I was the girl from the other side of the tracks, Pretty in Pink. That's what I related to.
Ah, Molly Ringwald is with us this morning. 877-8-MY-TAKE or send an email to mytake@thetakeaway.org. Your hair's not red.
But it's curly.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at KnightFoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
Good morning, everyone. It's The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry with
I'm
Amy Holmes. And we've got some big economic news coming out this morning.
We do. And with us here in the studio to discuss and prognosticate is Lakshman Achuthan, Managing Director of the Economic Cycle. Lakshman, we're going to get your predictions a little bit later in the show. But first, I want to ask you, the government is going to come out with their numbers. Mm-hmm. How do you come out with yours when you're crunching and guesstimating?
Well, I'm very careful. We use some government data. We use some survey data where you call up people or you ask questions. And then we use market data where you just say, how much does something cost? And these are three different sources of data. All of them are slightly imperfect. But when you put them together, you have less risk of being wrong. And we try to focus on the things that move first, that drive the economic cycle.
And you know, we've had you here before talking about leading indicators versus mm-hmm. lagging indicators, but I thought we'd focus today on you split out the economy and look yep. at different sectors. You
yes.
go deep into particular places as examples of what's going on in the broader economy.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, you can look at the industrial sector. It has big, big cycles, so you can focus in there, even though it's not the majority of the economy.
Well, Lashman, you know, because we are in radio and we can do absolutely anything that we want, we decided to find a trap door in the economy, and we opened it up. And we actually sent, it's around here somewhere, we sent Femi Okeh down into it to rummage around in the economy and actually come up with some of these economic indicators that you look at as a sort of a statistical model. Femi?
I thought you'd never let me out of that dungeon. Thank you so much. Good morning, everybody. Well, Lakshman and I worked together this week. He gave me a list of just random words, dogs, condoms, shoes, and then sent me out to report to see what I could find. So we're going to start at the Animal Haven Shelter. That's in New York.
So your first economic indicator involves pets.
Pets.
Okay.
Start with pets. I want you to meet a young lady. Her name is Yue Xu. She's beautiful. She's personable. She's a party girl, basically. Before the recession, she used to go out a lot. Now she's trying to save her money. But she's looking for a puppy to adopt. Now, she wants something, somebody to love. I met her with her girlfriends. Her girlfriends are going to be the adoptive parents of this new puppy. And when I met her, she was falling in love with Casey.
Oh, you want to carry her? We love
she's
her.
She's very soft, and she definitely is just a puppy. Her ears are really floppy. I would want to spend all of my money on her. Forget food for myself.
Spoil her.
I'm going to live at Petco.
Ah, there's the economics.
Lakshman, don't you wish you were that puppy?
Oh, yeah. I love dogs. I love dogs.
All right, so mushy, smushy, but what the economics is?
Well, to adopt a puppy at the Animal Haven, it costs $250. Now, if you were going to buy a puppy, it would be at least double that,
uh-huh.
maybe $800 going up into the thousands of dollars. So that was a trend that I found. But Lakshman, you sent me out on a slightly different mission, and I was finding some different kind of data.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is, and we didn't see this coming. A client came to us, a major pet food company, and they wanted to talk to us about the relationship called doggy downtime. How long do you wait after your dog passes away before you get another dog? And this is related directly, closely to where we are in the business
cycle.
All
right, now how does that work?
Just
how
an
does
emotional
that work?
Decision?
Well, no, it's essentially, there's a financial decision here, and Femi's touching on it, where the cost of love, in this case, you know, can be put off a little bit until the economy firms a little bit. And you also see it in
so,
the
so
quality.
Wait a minute, let me just yep. back up a second. So dog dies.
Yep.
I'm really upset.
Yep.
During certain economic times, you would expect that person to replace the dog
Look, normally your instinct is to do it right away.
Right away, okay.
Or as soon as you've grieved and you're ready to go.
And the recessionary indicator is?
That it takes longer. Uh-huh. Doggy downtime gets longer All during right. recessions.
All right, well, let's hear the sound of doggy downtime actually in action, Femi.
Okay, this is over at the ASPCA. I'm finding another trend as well, which is called maybe the adoption uptick.
There you go.
So what we're seeing actually, Lakshman, is I talked to a number of shelters, and they're seeing an uptick in adoptions, more people adopting, but there's a lag time between yep. how long the dogs are normally staying in the shelters.
Yep.
So I actually went up to the ASPCA, the headquarters are here in New York. I spoke to Dr. Stephen Zafistowski, and he explained the link between the economy and how long the dogs are staying at the shelter.
When people are having a difficult economic period, they're also thinking twice about, should I bring another pet into my home? They were going to adopt because they were doing okay. Now if they're a little closer to the red line in their budget, they may say, I don't think I have time or money to get a pet.
So what's good for pets may be bad for other parts of the economy. What's bad for pets may be good for other parts of the economy.
Absolutely. This is. I mean, I think the intention is often there with people, but sometimes your budget limits what you can do, and you're seeing that. You also see it in the quality of food that you give your pet.
I was going to say the cost of a pet is not just at buying it, but yeah. you know, maintaining it.
Absolutely.
So you can extrapolate out from those kinds of tiny little details.
Well, those can confirm kind of where we are, and we use that to confirm very much that we've been in a recession.
Let me give you some hard figures here. Adoptions are up around about 15 to 20%. Animals are staying in the shelters much longer than they normally would. Pet shelters are getting less money, so they're really struggling. And of course, in the city shelters, if they don't get rid of the animals really quickly, what happens is they get euthanized. Little connection between the Great Depression and now. Yeah. In the Great Depression in New York, 300,000 animals were given up for to pet shelters. 296,000 were euthanized. This year, they're expecting around about 15,000 animals to be euthanized just in the city of New York. So that's sort of like some hard figures and hard data. But something that is actually kicking the trend is people just needing something, somebody to love. So they're changing their lifestyle to accommodate for the economy.
There's a couple who were planning on adopting a puppy in the fall after they went on their vacation, but when they met this one particular puppy, they knew that they were in love, and so instead of going away on vacation in a few weeks, they decided they were just going to stay in New York and do a staycation with their new puppy.
So that's Jennifer Bristol. She's the director of operations at the Animal Haven Shelter.
So that suggests that in the recession, people are really making trade-offs, and one part of the economy might benefit, and another part of the economy, the travel industry, suffers.
Absolutely, the staycation. And what's happening here is essentially a version of nesting, where you're saying, you know, I don't need to go across the world and do these things. I'm going to stay at home. I'm going to make my home better, warmer, more nourishing for me, and that may include a pet.
And people are also using things longer, maybe postponing a decision to buy and maybe fixing something rather than actually getting something new. Right, Femi?
Absolutely. And so I went along to a cobbler, shoe repair guy on Wall Street, of all places. His name is Minas. He's been making shoes for over 57 years. And at the height of when the banks were collapsing last fall, his customers were coming in and saying goodbye. They worked for JP Morgan. They worked for AIG. So I asked him, what kind of clientele did he actually have?
I have customers from regular salary. I have customers, billionaires here, believe it or not.
Can you show me a billionaire's shoes? I just want to touch. I want to touch some money.
No, the money. It's the shoes they fit and they're comfortable.
Billionaires need comfortable shoes, period, the end.
Absolutely.
Oh my
Never
God,
changes.
Shoes.
So Minas Polokranakis is fixing shoes on Wall Street, and I was there for 2 hours. The shoe shop was busy. It was heaving. He's doing great business.
But Bruno Mali can't be happy.
Well, how do you extrapolate out from that? People postponing decisions, but the repair business going through the roof.
Absolutely. It's discretionary spending. It's the same idea of not getting a new car, although now we've got a boost in cars, and maybe fixing it and fixing the house instead of getting a new house. And this is something that we were observing literally over half a century ago
right. In
this economy. And that kind of thing, even though we find ourselves so modern in all these things, some things don't change.
Very quickly, how do you distinguish between necessities and the luxuries of the world? Because they're different tracks. They're different engines.
Well, in the broad swaths of the economy, education, healthcare, you need those. You don't have a choice. You can't, like, say, I don't want to go to school because it's a recession, for example, or I'm not going to the doctor. But when it comes down to a fancy pair of shoes or a long, expensive vacation, you can also do something different.
So there's more economic truth in the discretionary luxury items than in the necessities. Interesting.
Absolutely.
Femi, you got I don't know whether this is a necessity or a luxury, what you're about to talk about.
I'm just going to finally change the mood. Something a little sultry here. So finally on my list of discretionary items, condoms. So I went off to a
discretionary?
Yes.
Sometimes
it's a necessity. So I went off to Babeland in Soho in New York to see what the customers there were buying and how important it was to them. So meet Rosa here from Massachusetts.
Rosa is very quiet.
She is very quiet.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, so
well, I'm here with my sister and my daughter, and she just introduced us to the store and wanted us to know there were all kinds of enhancements to the sexual adventure. And we were looking at vibrators, and even though this is a recessionary time where people are counting their pennies, one I brought is a very nice treat.
So economic indicator, vibrators up, is that what you're saying?
Yes, high-quality vibrators up and condoms off the shelf.
Social indicator that this is a family excursion?
Intimacy is really important during the economy.
Lachman Achuthan, what is your prediction for the unemployment rate when it comes out later this month or this morning?
Yeah, the unemployment rate's going to edge up.
6 or 7. 9.6 or 7.
There you
All right, we got you on the record.
Thank you, Lachman Achuthan, Economic Cycle Research Institute.
Yeah.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.